This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, Brandon. How's it going, Brandon?
I'm doing pretty darn good and I'm happy to be here. Thanks, guys, for inviting me on and letting me crash your party.
Oh, sure, no, it's good to have you here, man. Yeah. It's good to mix it up and, you know, because I think Mike and I are very intrigued to get an outside view on this in specific.
Well, I messaged Mike last night right away yesterday afternoon because I went to see the movie finally last night, and I'm a big Alien fan. Without going into this movie here, I'm a huge Alien fan. So when I heard you guys were talking about this, I'm like, I want to get on here and talk about this too.
Awesome.
Yeah. So yes, we're talking about Alien Covenant today, the new feature film directed by Ridley Scott, which was released in theaters last week, and it was co-written by John Logan, who wrote Star Trek Nemesis and a couple movies that we talked about in recent weeks, including Any Given Sunday and Skyfall. And it was co-written by a few other people, someone named Dante Harper, who has never written anything which has been produced before. And the story is by Jack Paglen, the guy who did Transcendence, which is not a good movie.
That's what I've heard.
And Michael Green, who has sort of been taking the movie world by storm this year, having written or co-written not only Alien Covenant, but also Logan, and co-show running American Gods along with Brian Fuller. So it's the summer of Green, I guess.
I like that.
Yeah. He's also writing Blade Runner 2049, by the way, and Murder on the Orient Express. So it's
really
crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
And he wrote Green Lantern, so there's some.
Well, that I hope he didn't get that job just because of his last name.
Hopefully not. Oh, he also wrote Green Lantern Emerald Knights, which was also not very good. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So, okay, John, would you like to give us a synopsis of Alien Covenant?
Yes. If you've seen Alien before, something very similar happens, only it's tied into Prometheus by an android. And that's about it.
Yeah, that is a fairly accurate description of this movie. Okay, so Prometheus came out, which, by the way, you know, you can go back and check out commentary Trek Stars during our Damon Lindelof run and get our thoughts, at least some of our thoughts, on Prometheus.
Yes, you can.
And yeah, so Brandon, you were excited to talk about this here movie. I guess before we get started, what is your relationship with the Alien franchise?
Well, as I was talking with Matthew Rushing over on the 602 Club when we did a review of Alien, and my first experience with the Xenomorph was in Spaceballs. So I had actually never seen I'd never seen any of the Alien movies, and I was way too young. Like I was probably 9 or 10 years old when my parents had rented this movie for me, and it scared the bejesus out of me watching this movie. I'm like, what is going on? Why is his chest exploding? What is this? And then it starts dancing and I'm like, ah. So that was quite the interesting. So it was several years before I realized the cultural reference that they were making in that film.
Yeah. So since then, you've become a big Alien fan?
Humongous Alien fan. I really, really like all of the Alien movies except for Alien vs. Predator Requiem. I look at it on my shelf and I contemplate, do I want a frontal lobotomy with a rusty nail or do I want to watch that movie again? And I just walk away because both are equally painful.
Okay, see, that's interesting. I want to pause on that for just a second because I had big, big problems with Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
It's terrible.
What is it? What is it? Is it just the movie as a whole, or was there a specific part of the movie?
Everything.
That,
the dialogue was terrible. The killings were terrible. I don't know. It was just really bad. I liked Alien vs. Predator quite a bit. I thought it was an interesting take, but just the sequel, I'm like, they didn't need to do this, and it was just, I don't know. I've seen it like 3 times, and honestly, I regret not slamming my head in a car door.
I you know what? I'll be there with you. I'll say that Alien vs. Predator Requiem made me appreciate Alien vs. Predator.
Yeah.
Because I was like, maybe I was a little too hard on that one. But I wasn't, so...
Yeah, but other than that, I like all the Alien movies quite a bit. So when Prometheus came out, I was very excited. I didn't like it as much as the other ones, and you know, so but I was eager when this one was coming out because Ridley Scott was directing it again, and I'm like, well, let's see what's going on here.
All right.
Okay.
So John, what about you? What was your first exposure to Alien, and what do you think about the franchise on the whole?
Aliens was my first exposure to the Alien franchise on home video because it was all the rage. So of course, got rented and somebody had it on, and I guess I was a fragile child, and I watched it. And to this day, that scene of the alien queen coming out of the elevator from the pitch black will still, like, I'm still cowering in the corner because that is just that's an image that stays with you when you're younger. But then I saw Alien much later. And came to appreciate how different the two movies were. And I think that the emotional bond of the first two Alien movies is so strong that it sort of stays with you and you keep wanting to give it a chance. And I was thinking about this recently. I do think it's because the Alien is one of the few movie monsters that nobody can humanize. There's not going to be an Alien movie where you're going to find a tender alien that ponders, why do I kill? You know, or anything like that. It's just the monster. It's just the presence of death, the inescapable truth of it all. And I think that's why people keep coming back to it, even after all of the movies of varying quality, is because you know at the very least the monster is not going to be, like, rationalized or reasoned with at some point. It's simply a monster.
And Resurrection comes pretty close in that regard.
I have not watched Resurrection in a very long time, and there are reasons for that. So
okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
What about you, though, Mike? What's your connection with the Alien series?
I had always heard about it, you know, and it was one of those things which I had always, I guess, wanted to see. But the thing that finally pushed me over the edge—this is going to sound so stupid. I've said this before. They were releasing a Superman versus Aliens comic book.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And I was like, oh, I guess I better get ready for Superman versus Aliens and watch, you know, the Alien movies. So my friend who I worked at the comic book store with, he brought in his Laserdisc player with his big box sets of Alien and Aliens and showed those to me at the comic book store. He's like, you don't need to watch Alien 3. It's garbage. So I didn't watch it. I fell in love with those movies pretty hard real quick. And then, yeah, I've been an Alien fan ever since. Not a huge fan of Alien 3, although I do appreciate the David Lean work print cut. And David Lean, the 4-hour long, you know, alien movie, Lawrence of Arabia style. Or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Alien Resurrection is good at all. I don't know. My impression of the Alien versus Predator movies is very complicated in that I saw the first one and thought that was good, and then I saw the second one and I was like, oh man, that was terrible. Oh. But it was better than the first one. And yet, even now, when I watch them, I'm like, I like the first one better than the second one. And yet, I think the second one is more skillfully made. But regardless, I don't have strong feelings about either of those movies, one way or the other. But I was really looking forward to Prometheus when it was released. And when I first saw it, I liked a lot of the things that they did in it. And I was sort of a really big fan and a pretty big champion of that movie. And rewatching it last week, prior to this movie, I was much more lukewarm on it. And I think that it's still good, but it's definitely not the essential viewing which I at one time thought it was.
See, I rewatched it as well, and my opinion of it actually went up this time for Prometheus. And I think part of the reason why I didn't like it as much the first time was because it didn't connect the universe enough. And it was, you know, there was just too much that was like, well, I don't understand how they got from point A to point B, or I guess point P to point A, right, with Prometheus to Alien. But I definitely enjoyed it more watching it on Saturday than I did in previous viewings of it.
See, for me with Prometheus, I was not entirely sold on it, and then around halfway point, it kind of broke me, and I was like, whoa. And I go back to Red Letter Media when they had all of the questions from Prometheus. You know, one of the things that always made me laugh the hardest, where it was like, you know, how did he know that was going to happen? Is he some sort of expert in things that happen when you've never done them before? Why? You know, and it's like, the way things went in Prometheus very much had the air of it was going this way because it had to, instead of feeling like it grew organically. And then the end of the movie, and I loved using it to bludgeon Lindelof's resume, you know, which became sort of a hobby for a lot of us. But just the ending was just, I thought, just a mess. And there were aspects of it that I didn't like, that looked like they were just lifted from Gladiator and like inserted, and it looked almost like a pastiche of, you know, Ridley Scott's greatest hits put together. And so Prometheus just never gelled for me, to the point where I was then that guy sitting there and like criticizing the scientist for taking his helmet off, or the guy for seeing the weird snaky alien creature and being like, oh, I'll pick this up. And it was like, you know, yes, I get it. It's a horror movie and you make bad decisions and everything, but you're setting up the thing that's like, it's this big scientific expedition, and then everybody acts like the worst scientist in the universe. And it's like, and for me, that stems from all of the story problems, then open up the floodgate for me to jump in and just beat up on it for the tiny things that I'd normally look past.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, so here we come to Alien Covenant, which is, for all practical purposes, a sequel to Prometheus. Originally, they didn't want to have the alien, you know, moniker in the title, but, you know, studios and whatnot. So it becomes another alien movie, and yes, there's some interesting things that go along with that. So now, Brandon, what were your thoughts on Alien Covenant?
I really enjoyed it, and I think part of the reason why I enjoyed it was it was enough of a callback to the first Alien movie without being too much of a callback to the first Alien movie, I think. Like, it's very similar in many ways. Like, for example, the real main action doesn't start until about halfway into the movie, right? Which is kind of how the first Alien works. You know, it does take a slow build and things slowly happen. We have some interesting things, like when the people wake up from... I know we try and keep it spoiler-free in this one here, but when the people wake up from their hypersleep at the beginning, it's done differently than we've ever seen before, right? They haven't been woken up quite in that manner before. So I really enjoyed that, and it put it on an interesting level right at the beginning, you know? And plus we've got Walter, who's this same android that we've seen before, but he's got an American accent instead of an English accent. And so you're like, okay, well, how is this going to play out with it? So I like that there was enough homages to the original without it being copying it, is how I felt.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
What about you, John?
You know, I went up very sort of middle of the road on it. The characters didn't connect with me. I didn't care for how they got them to the planet in the beginning, not because it was a copy or because of anything like that, but because it relied so heavily on happenstance. I thought that we all knew where we were going to go and how it was going to end up there, and I think that it took entirely too long to get to that point. I understand slow build and everything, but at the same time, it could have been a little bit quicker getting there, because when Fassbender comes back as, you know, as David, that's not really a spoiler. I think everybody knows that happens in this movie, is really when, you know, like it sort of comes to life, you know, and it's sort of, hey, and some of the first alien encounter stuff just doesn't play well. It plays much more like a distraction. So at the same time, I liked some of the philosophical questions and some of the setup and some of the idea of some of the stuff that it answers without saying it explicitly about the aliens' evolution and stuff like that. There, you know, so there were intriguing parts of it, but at the end of it, I didn't have enough of an emotional investment, and I didn't care for how long it took to get to certain things. So I went up very middle of the road with it, where I'm like, I don't hate it. I'm not nuts about it. I can understand why somebody would like it more than I do, and I can also understand why somebody would like it less than I do. That's where I wound up.
Yeah, I guess I feel pretty much the same way in a lot of regards. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good movie, but at the same time, like, I mean, just as an example of this, like, where, you know, Alien and Aliens, I can watch repeatedly and get something new out of them every single time, and I think that they're two of the, you know, best movies ever made for different reasons, you know, and everything like that. With this one, I enjoyed it while I was watching it, and yet it was completely disposable to me, so much so that I was talking about it with a coworker like 2 or 3 days after I saw it, and she's like, yeah, that ending was pretty crazy though, right? And I literally just sat there with a blank look on my face and was like, what happens in the ending? And then she tells me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, with the whole thing and the, yeah, that was crazy, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, that was basically my reaction to this movie, you know? There were things about it which were interesting and things about it which were very, very standard. I think it kind of, like, devolves into this standard thing, familiar, enjoyable, and yet disposable, you know, as it progresses. You know, when it starts off, I mean, one of the things which I thought was really, really interesting about it was, you know, Prometheus was shot in 3D, and it looks amazing. The 3D is amazing and everything like that. And after that movie came out, Ridley Scott was like, I love 3D. I will never shoot a movie in 2D again. You know, I mean, he flat out said that. And then this movie comes out and it's 2D. And I'm like, that's very strange. What's going on? And, you know, the Fox seems to be like veering away from 3D in a lot of ways. I'm like, was this a studio decision or what? But when the movie started up, I'm like, oh, I think this might have been a creative decision, because the original Alien is very raw visually. There's a lot of handheld stuff. There's a lot of overlapping dialogue, a lot of improvisational stuff, and it really sort of creates this almost documentary feel. And this movie, at the start, does the same thing. It's tapping into what a lot of people, I think, responded to with that first movie by making it more real, making it feel like a lived-in universe and all this stuff, and not this, you know, like, nice, clean, 3D world, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they start introducing the Prometheus elements into it, and I'm like, wow, that's really interesting, you know, how he is really sort of, like, bridging the gap between these two movies in a lot of ways. Yeah. And by the time it gets to Alien Land, you know, with all of the the alien stuff going on,
the worst,
I'm like,
theme park ever.
What was that?
I said the worst theme park ever.
Or maybe the best. I mean, I don't know. Like, you go to Disney World, and when you go on the great movie ride and you go through the Nostromo section, the best thing ever. The best thing ever. When we were getting married at Disney World, and they completely screwed us over and took away our venue, at one point we were playing like hardball with them, and they're like, okay, fine. If everything was on the table, if you could get married anywhere in the park, where would you get married? And I'm like, the Nostromo. And they're like, yeah, that's not happening. I'm like, okay, fine. Then I guess we're going back to the negotiating table. So so I would totally go to Alien Land, but regardless of any of that, once we get there in this movie, like, there's definitely a skill to the craftsmanship, which I can appreciate, and it's definitely this familiar territory that I kind of like being in, but at the same time, I feel like no boundaries are being pushed. Like, it's literally, I mean, once we get to the scene in the shower, I'm like, this is, and it's almost okay. Like a very compressed version of the first movie, you know?
See, I want to call out the scene in the shower in specific, because that really bugged me for two reasons. One, I realized I'd forgotten those characters even existed, and I was like, oh, right, yeah, you could have just skipped this, and I wouldn't have known. But two, it was a Friday the 13th movie scene.
Yes.
I was like, this doesn't belong here.
No.
This is just cheap thrill. This is not cool, man. Like, no, it's pure distraction. And it's like, it serves no purpose.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, I mean, I do. Too, yeah.
I do remember the characters, because the woman was one of Emma Stone's roommates from La La Land. So I was like, hey.
See, maybe I should have seen La La Land.
Yeah, then you should have seen La La Land. Known. You would have been a lot better off, to be honest.
Here's a question. Did any of you remember the character names outside of Walter and David coming out of the theater?
That's not a fair question for me, because I never remember anything. And okay. I remember Brandon. David, because it's David and it seems like it makes sense. And the only reason why I remember Walter is because when they said his name was Walter, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was a pretty clever wink.
I'm it was so clever that I was like, how did they get away with that?
It has to be.
What am I missing?
The producers of all of the movies and, you know, the people who, I guess they wrote the original, co-wrote the original movie or something like that.
No, but O'Bannon and Shusett and Guiler and Hill.
Yeah, Dan O'Bannon and Ron Shusett. Yeah, but the producers are David Guiler and Walter Hill. And they've produced, and by produced, I think basically what? You know, got some
got
royalties
paid.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. every single Alien movie since the first one. It's, you know, so anyway, regardless of any of that, you know, it's weird. But the thing that I think is really interesting about this, I mean, so there's that, and it's fairly insignificant. Whatever. The thing that I think which is most interesting about the movie, and the thing which I think is most interesting in looking at it as far as John Logan is concerned and as far as Star Trek fans are concerned, is really the David-Walter relationship.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That, to me, I mean, a couple things. First off, it seems like that is what interests Scott the most. Would you guys agree?
In this
film,
yeah,
completely
sure,
agree.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's carrying it over from Prometheus and all this other stuff. And the other thing about it, which I find to be interesting in that regard, is he seems to be intent making Alien movies from now until the day he dies, right? He's going to make at least one more, maybe two, right? You know?
Right.
He's got another science fiction franchise sitting over here that he's involved with but has other people making movies for, which is all about robots.
Right.
Why is he not doing anything there?
And what defines humanity? And what defines, what intelligence is and what,
Like he's made the definitive android movie, and yet he's wanting to tackle that issue further in this Alien franchise, which certainly it's a part of it, but I mean, come on, you know?
And by definitive, you mean the theatrical cut of that movie, right?
Yeah, that's what...
Isn't that what everybody means?
When you've got Superman on the table, you're not going to be doing Shazam, you know what I mean? I mean, but here's the thing. It feels to me like there was a very obvious parallel here between Walter and David and Data and Lore, right?
Yes.
I mean, so much so that they're even like, the first one was too perfect. You know, we got rid of it and, you know, made a less perfect version so that people could relate better.
But then there's also an echo of it with Data and B4, which was basically like another, you know, exploration of that sort of thing.
Which Logan did himself.
Right.
And then there's even the whole thing, and here we're going to get into a little bit of spoiler territory. Well, maybe not, but like if anyone's seen Brothers, there's a plot point in that episode which very much echoes something in Alien Covenant.
Right.
Like, to the point of it being, I mean, we all know, I mean, John Logan is very much on record as being an uber Star Trek fan, right? I mean, he says he's seen all the episodes and everything like that. You know, he wrote Nemesis, which by all, you know, accounts, his original script was much more sort of like fan service than what it was we got. I mean, this Data stuff has got to be, you know, in the front of his mind anytime he's writing anything concerning androids.
Sure.
And I really do feel like this is sort of the alien version of Data and Lore, right?
Yeah. I'm totally down. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you on that. Absolutely agree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the whole thing I've been sort of wrestling with since seeing it is I think I can see the parts where Logan's fingerprints are strongest on it. And when, you know, the stuff that, you know, because there's the whole ampersand versus and debate about writing screenplays and stuff like that, how those credits break down. And I very much get the impression with certain things that occur in this where I can see Logan's imprint really strong throughout certain parts. And then I can see parts where I feel like I got, you know, a resonant frequency of, oh, this is somebody else. This doesn't feel quite like it belongs and it was inserted here because they wanted to do something a little different with it. You know, I just think the way that certain things broke down, the way that they handled the flashback of him showing up, I think the shower scene, you know, to go back to that, is a very clear indication that they were like, oh, we need to insert this here. I honestly don't think that would have been in the, I mean, I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong, but it felt so tacked on. And the thing is, what was really weird was there was so much stuff released online that was originally in the movie, but they cut for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I will tip my hat for one thing, in that James Franco is in this movie. Barely.
Yes, that was a surprise.
But what I like about that is I know, because I saw the stuff that they released beforehand, I know there was more of him in it. I actually applaud them for not tailoring, you know, certain parts to be like, well, we can't get rid of our Franco. We got to keep him in. They made the same choice they would have made if it wasn't James Franco in the movie. And I tip my hat to that.
The same thing with Noomi.
Rapace.
Rapace? That's how you pronounce her name? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing with that. And I'm wondering, because like, okay, so Lindelof originally had an idea for the sequel, and, you know, if you look at, you know, old interviews with Lindelof and with Scott, you know, they definitely had an idea for where they wanted to go. And Scott has even said recently, like, you know, I underestimated people's desire for more aliens in their alien movies and whatnot. And he really sort of, like, I think, course corrected based on I would say kind of the wrong criticism of Prometheus, but whatever, you know, and made this movie into something that it originally wasn't intended to be. It is now more of a bridge between Prometheus and Alien, whereas, you know, as Lindelof originally described, you know, the franchise, he's like, Alien is one sequel to Prometheus. Prometheus 2 is going to be another sequel where it, you know, it sort of branches off, and there's going to be, you know, almost parallel stories going on, you know, coming out of Prometheus. And that's not what this is at all. And if you think about that, if you think about how there was an original idea and certainly elements from that idea which you wanted to incorporate into this, and the fact that it took four other writers working with Scott to come up with this thing, I think what you're saying, John, about, you know, various pieces and being cobbled together in a way, it makes sense that it feels like that, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's one other thing which I want to get your thoughts on here, which it does kind of bother me. Someone brought this up online, and you know, it makes sense. I mean, yes. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are talking about it, but you know, the idea of like the way the first two movies are structured, Alien and Aliens and everything, it's definitely told from the perspective of you know, the people who are experiencing this thing, and we're given information the same way that they are, and there isn't a lot of reveal, there isn't a lot of stuff which is known outside of the people who we are with. You know, we see the eggs, we see the alien, we see the life cycle and all this stuff, and aside from, you know, some hints that the corporation may have an idea of what's going on, we really are not given any information about what these things are. We're given bits and pieces, things like, you know, the space jockey and things like, you know, the aliens being inside of a ship and stuff like that. And we're left to fill in the gaps for how this works, for why this is the way it is, for what these things are, whether they're engineered, whether they're not, or whatever. It seems like with Prometheus, and now I think even more so with Covenant, there is a definite attempt on Scott's part to sort of like explicitly say what this stuff is. Do you think that that in some way cheapens the other movies?
Personally, right? I don't think that it does, because that's kind of what prequels are designed to do, is to tell the story of how we got to this point. I mean, like the Star Wars prequels are designed to say, how did Luke and Leia end up where they were? And how did Darth Vader become Darth Vader? How did Anakin become Darth Vader? You know, like that's what prequels are designed to do. And it's a new type of storytelling that's really come to fruition over the last 20 years or so, basically with those movies. I mean, I heard you talking on your Soderbergh 2828 this morning, and you were talking about how the Temple of Doom, right? Then that was the only reason they made that a prequel, was because they didn't want to use Nazis again. They wanted to do something different, right? So that's told in a completely different manner in the prequels and how they're being told in this day and age, right? Which is filling out the story of getting to where we see the characters the first time that we see them. So I don't think it cheapens it at all. I think it's just a part of what storytelling is and what prequels are designed to do.
Okay. All right.
I thought that thematically it worked for me, because I thought that it was interesting on the level of the metaphor of when we create this David, this AI life form, the whole Nietzschean concept of do we kill God, and then what happens when our creation turns on us. And I thought that tying it together, because that has always been sort of, you know, one of the things that fans love to debate is like, you know, why do I'm just gonna say it because I'm not gonna worry about the spoiler of this deep in, but you know, why were the aliens so perfectly suited for humans in specific? And it's like tying it in is like, because it's the ultimate revenge of our Frankenstein's monster, is he made his own monster specifically so that we couldn't go out into the greater universe. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like that. They're like, somebody's so obsessed with making sure that humanity doesn't survive that they're going to take steps so that everywhere humanity goes, they're going to get killed. That's kind of cool.
I guess I see what you guys are saying, but at the same time, I think about why people don't like Alien 3, why I kind of don't like Alien 3, and it really has nothing to do with the movie itself. It has to do with what the movie does to aliens. And I think that that's in a lot of ways a valid criticism of it, because it's not building on top of what came before. It's stepping all over it in order to you know, do its own thing. And in a lot of ways, I think that maybe Covenant is doing the same thing to the first movie, only in reverse. And in that sense, it's kind of dumb. You know, I mean, like I mean, I can
see what you're saying.
Yeah,
I can see why you would feel that way about it. You know, and I think that goes back to like why I'm so middle of the road. I can get why people would have, you know, certain problems with it, and I can get why some people would like it more. And like, that's why I'm sort of like in the center. It's just like, I can see your point of view. It didn't happen to bother me. And then I can, you know, and then Brandon can have a better opinion of it, and I can be like, well, I can see why you're coming at it that way, but it just didn't hit that mark for me, you know?
So. And I think it's the type of thing where, you know, in sort of my approach to things like that, I mean, like, I can look at Alien 3, the work print cut at least, and be like, that's a good movie on its own. Or I can look at Covenant and say, that's a good movie on its own. I mean, sort of the ultimate example of this for me is like Terminator 3, where I'm like, that movie's badass. It completely does not understand at all what Terminator 2 did. It actually takes the like exact opposite philosophical approach to the material. And in that regard, you can say that it was kind of ridiculous that they chose to go this route. But if you just look at Terminator 3 on its own terms and sort of are willing to accept an entirely different worldview for this franchise, you can say that movie's pretty badass. So I guess that's kind of how I see Covenant. And in some ways, I can criticize it for what it does to the franchise. In other ways, I can look at it on its own terms and say, yeah, that was okay. But what about you, Brandon? Do you have any final thoughts on Alien Covenant?
Well, first I want to say that Terminator 3 is awesome just because of the scene when Arnold Schwarzenegger comes out and he's got that coffin on his shoulder and he's like just machine gunning up those. That is just amazing.
No.
Okay,
no.
So I just got to say
it violates
that, right?
The rule of unnecessary slow motion.
Oh, it's so good. Secondly, I got to say, I really enjoy Alien 3 a lot, and what I like about Alien 3 and is because they went from one monster to many monsters back to one monster, and I like that because I find the one monster to be more scary than the many. I love Aliens. It's a masterpiece, right? And the debate of which is better, Aliens or Alien, is do you like horror movies or do you like action movies? And that's really what it boils down to. They're both absolutely amazing movies. But I think Alien 3 is really cool because it expands on the mythos of the aliens in that they look this way because they're being fused with people. But look what happens when it gets fused with a dog, right? It becomes this different thing. So to me, that opened up the possibilities of what the xenomorphs were capable of because they take on different characteristics of who they're mating with. Right. And so that's part of what I liked about this movie a lot, this Alien Covenant, is because Prometheus left me like, well, how are they going to get there? I don't understand how this can be a prequel to Alien other than these few fan shots of, you know, the space jockey and whatnot. Oh, now we've got Alien Covenant and it's really bridging the gap of what David did. And I like that a lot. I think it's really cool and I really appreciate it for that. This movie is better than Prometheus. It's not as good as Alien. But, you know, I like it a lot, and I would recommend people go see it. So one thing I want to mention, though, is I don't know if you guys caught it. I'm the music guy on the network. I run the music show. I didn't catch the composer's name. I saw it. I'd never heard of this guy before. But he really was going for the Prometheus and the Alien themes. Like, he was really hitting the Jerry Goldsmith score hard, and whoever the guy was that did Prometheus as well. Like, he was really hitting both of those to the point where I'm pretty sure that I've only seen the movie once, but the flute music that David was playing, like, that was the music from Prometheus, the score for Prometheus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're right.
So I thought that was kind of interesting, but...
Yeah, no, I agree, and the music was really good. I did like the way that they sort of were weaving that together. So what about you, John? Any final thoughts?
I agree it was better than Prometheus. Some people are going to really like it. Some people are really going to hate it. I actually, one of the people that went to see this with me, I went with two other people. One person was right there with you, Brandon. They thought it was wonderful. And there was another person with me who has not stopped hammering it since he saw it. And that is, I think that's what's going to happen. But what's going to be interesting is I think that it's going to be less. I mean, Prometheus was highly not even polarizing, but people seem to really enjoy start hating on that over time. I don't think that'll happen with this one. I think this is one of the ones where, like, it, you know, eventually when all the dust settles, people will be like, you know, that was pretty good. Like, I think that's pretty much where it's going to end up.
Yeah, for me, I mean, with Prometheus, I came out of the gate loving it so much. I think, you know, partially because I was really sort of under the impression that it was just like a crazy movie. Like they were just doing things like that were just like off the deep end. And I kind of appreciate when movies do that, you know? And like rewatching it this time, I'm like, it's not as crazy as I thought. And when you take away the crazy, it just becomes kind of standard. Whereas this one, I think, was much safer from start to finish, but maybe more skillfully made. I don't know. Regardless, I go back and forth whether or not this is better than Prometheus. Maybe this is better. I don't know. But I enjoyed both of them, you know, and I think that they're both decent entries into the Alien franchise, and yet not nearly as good as those first two movies. Those first two movies are just such epic masterpieces that everything else pales in comparison, and it's going to take something really, really special to top it. And I'll always wonder what the Chappie guy had in store, because even though I don't like any of his movies, his idea sounded so crazy and cool that I think I would have really, really dug it. And it's unfortunate that we'll never see it.
You didn't like District 9?
No.
Oh,
I didn't. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you're the first person that I've ever spoken to that didn't like District 9. But
well, you know, I mean, I've explained this elsewhere, but I mean, I think the thing about District 9 is that maybe it was a really good movie, and yet it was just too painful to watch. I felt the same way about Chappie, where there's so much stuff where it's just like people are treated with such inhumanity that it makes me feel uncomfortable and sad and sort of like almost freak out in a way. Like, I don't want to be watching the cruelty on display, you know?
No, that makes sense. And I get that.
And,
sure.
And in a way, it's like, that's almost praise for the movie, because obviously that's what he was going for. Like, he does a really good job of, you know, sort of making you connect with these characters and feeling for them in a way that most movies don't. But at the same time, he does such a good job of it that I don't want to watch his movies, you know? So, I don't know. Take that as you will. But okay. That's neither here nor there. Okay. So, it's been fun talking about Alien Covenant today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
It's interesting how they're doing the casting, but I think it would be nice to actually have two ships involved, because one thing that I feel Star Trek has long suffered from, even with Deep Space Nine, which did try to break out of it a bit, is that small world syndrome.
Standard orbit.
And Jim Carrey, as they're fighting, he's like singing along. He's like, brah, brah. As he's fighting, he's singing along as he's fighting Matthew Broderick. And man, it's just so good. Like, to me, that's like, when I think of Star Trek and pop culture, like, that is the one, that's the first scene that I think of in the Cable Guy there.
The orb.
This is another thing that we're seeing all over the world, but this whole idea that just because something is hard, we should avoid it. But that is absolutely untrue. I mean, just look at your life, look at my life, I look at anybody's life, and the things where people have learned the most have been the hard things.
To the journey!
Wait, you're saying it's like matter and antimatter when they interact? They
it's like costume and non-costume.
So costumes and non-costumes annihilate each other.
Yes.
In Voyager.
Exactly. That is how the universe is going to ultimately be destroyed, due to the interaction of naked people and people wearing clothes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You can discover us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app and get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most other third-party apps. You can also stream and download the MP3s directly from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. There are many ways that you can get in touch with us. The best place to have a larger conversation is on the Babel Conference, which is our listener group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we should come right up. If you want to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose to send to a show and select Stage 9, and we'll come right up. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Brandon, you've got a number of shows on this here network. What are you up to these days?
Oh, well, you can find me poking my head up every once in a while in the Babel Conference talking Trek. You can find me on Twitter where I'm doing the hashtag Star Trek Ultimate Tournament, where we're putting episodes against each other to try and find out what people's fan favorite is. And it's a lot of fun because sometimes you get some really obvious winners and sometimes you get some that are pretty darn close, like Savage Curtain and Miri. I can't believe that was a 50-50 split. Like, what's going on, people? Savage Curtin is way better than Miri.
They both suck.
Space Lincoln. How could Space Lincoln suck? Mm, yeah, John Lurie. You know who John Lurie is? You know John Lurie?
John Lurie, he's a music guy, right?
Yeah, music and film and stuff. He was, you know, he did that Fishing with John TV show. He like posted on Facebook and he's like, celebrate Lincoln Day. And I posted a picture. I'm like, go watch Savage Curtain for Lincoln Day. I'm also doing the Daily Poll on Twitter as well, which is, it's challenging. So if you guys have any ideas, please email me at Brandon, brandon.matella@trek.fm. It's very challenging trying to come up with a new poll every single day. So some of them are turning out good and some of them are really flopping, but that's where you can find me on social media. At Brandon Matella is my Twitter handle. You can find me here on the network with new episodes of Melodic Treks, which is all about the music of Star Trek. And I co-host Warp 5 with my buddy Floyd, where we're having a lot of fun doing interviews with stars and actors and writers of that show. Even if you don't like Enterprise, check us out because there's a lot of great behind-the-scenes stuff. And if you like this show, you'll like what we've been doing over on Warp 5. And my new show has launched on the Fandom Podcast Network, which is called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which I'm doing with my friends Chris Haig and Tom Caldwell. And episode 4 will actually be out on Sunday. And you can just find that by searching Fandom Podcast Network. And John, where can people find you when you're not secretly hiding in the closet watching Terminator 3 on your iPhone because you really love that movie so much?
Oh, so many things wrong with that statement. It hurts. But I'm Kessel Junkie Online. Everybody should know that by now. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And then if you go on over to the Nerd Party Network, I'm co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing, which is a wonky little Star Wars podcast. And I'm also co-hosting Great Shot Kid, which is an entirely strange concept looking at the work and influences of Star Wars creatives. And I co-host that with somebody named Mike Schindler. Mike, what would you know about that?
Yeah, it's a show. And we do talk about that stuff. And it's cool and it's fun. And you can also find me on TalkFilmSociety.com, where I do a show called Soderbergh 2828, where we look at all of Steven Soderbergh movies from beginning to end, and I'm convinced that the only person listening to that show is Brandon. But thank you, Brandon.
It's a great show. I like it. I'm going through watching with you, so it's a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun going back to see these ones and some that I haven't seen. So
it is a very fun show. So I recommend you checking that out. And you can also find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, doing commentary track stars, where we do a lot of things, audio commentaries and whatnot. Just yesterday, for the big 40th anniversary of Star Wars, we released a commentary for Rogue One. So head on over there and check that out. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right, we'd like to thank our associate producers, Jeff Sutter and Chris Steftenagel, today. Thank you very much, guys. We really appreciate your support. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, you can become a patron of the network. Just head over to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone, which is run by that guy over there.
Me, Brandon. And it's a lot of fun. There. Go there for early releases and some exclusive content. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, it takes a lot of money to produce this podcast network and do all that stuff. So, you know, every little bit helps, and we really do appreciate your support. So, again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Brandon. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I had a good time.
And John and I will be back next week to discuss, I don't know, what do you want to talk about next week?